I'm Michael Bungay-Stanier, MBS for short, and I love a good question. Now, if you know me at all, you probably know my book, The Coaching Habit, and that's become the best-selling book on coaching of the century. And at its heart are seven great questions. They range from the focus question, what's the real challenge here for you, to the strategic question, what am I saying yes to, and if I'm going to say yes to that, what must I say no to? And of course, there's awe, the best coaching question in the world, AWE, and what else? What I love about questions is their paradoxical nature. They can ground you and at the same time, they can disrupt you. They can reveal what you don't know and what you do know, even though you may not have realized it. They can help you better understand what's really happening in the here and now. And they can expand future possibilities. I've got five really good questions to share with you in this short audio teaching. These are questions I use myself to help navigate my day and my life. They make me wiser, more humble, by which I mean better able to grasp who I really am. And I think also they make me braver. They help me orient and reorient and then reorient again to the work I want to do and that work I want with more meaning and more impact. If you've read my book, How to Begin, you know a worthy goal is something thrilling and important and daunting. And these questions help me hold myself to those standards. In short, these questions help me trust, to trust in who I am, and what I can best offer to the world, to trust myself to do the work, and to trust in how things are going to work out, even when, as happens often enough, things don't work out at all as I expected. I use the first three questions to check in with myself at the start of the day. It's a process my friend Neil Pasricha taught me, although I now use different questions from the ones he started me on. And that, by the way, is an important side note. Consider the questions that I'm offering up here as the start of something rather than a final, perfect, non-negotiable set. You'll want to try them on and adjust or discard depending on what best serves you. So, here we go. The first question is simply, what am I noticing? What am I noticing? Now, I've got three places I might put my attention in response to this question. The first place is outside me. What's going on out there? What's grabbing my attention? The second place is actually in my head. What am I thinking? How am I thinking? What patterns of thought might I be ensnared in? And then finally, what's in my heart? What am I feeling? How is my world being shaded by the tint of my emotions? I like how on different days I notice different things, and normally it's one of those three areas. I like also how the question builds capacity and nuance in these three areas. For instance, I'm not that great at knowing how I'm feeling, and this question helps me get a little better at that. I'm also not that great always at seeing the difference between the facts and my interpretation or judgment of the facts. And this question helps me tease those apart. This question also just helps me be present. Now, once I've noticed something, I can choose to do something with it if I want. Let it go, enjoy it, amplify it. But often, for me at least, the magic comes just in the noticing. That's all that's required. The second question is, what am I grateful for? What am I grateful for? Now, there's a bunch of research that tells us that a regular gratitude practice is a doorway to happiness and contentment and health. It seems impossible that that can be true, but that's what the research tells us. So I ask myself that question daily, and sometimes I'm grateful for really small, tangible things. My cup of morning espresso, seeing a sunrise, hearing an Australian magpie's caroling song. Sometimes it's for bigger things, maybe more abstract or more ongoing, that I have the resources to be a writer, that I have the imagination to imagine myself as a writer, that I'm happily married. I don't try and overthink it, but the regularity of this practice means I keep finding things to be grateful for. Although, of course, it's fine to return to answers you've had before. I mean, you don't need a different answer to this question every time. Question three, and this is particularly helpful for me at the start of the day, is this. What's the one thing today? What's the one thing today? Now, I am chronically overcommitted. Too many projects, too many to-dos, too many meetings, too much interaction. I mean, I'd complain about it, but it's clear that one part of me likes it that way. And I've had days where I've crossed off 47 things from my to-do list, but never quite got around to the thing that is most critical to making progress on the stuff that matters. Being busy is one way of avoiding working on the stuff that matters. And by naming my one thing, the one thing I need to get done today or turn my attention today or spend time on today, by naming that one thing, I remember the bigger picture. Now, it used to be three things. What are the three things to get done today? But honestly, that started to feel burdensome. If I can do one important thing a day, then I'm going to make progress. And progress helps you be content and to make a difference. Teresa Amabile, an academic from Harvard Business School, wrote an entire book on this. It's called The Progress Principle. So those are my three daily start the day questions. I've got two more to share with you, one to finish the day with and one to reflect on about once a week. At 5:27 p.m. Monday through Thursday and at 3:27 p.m. on Friday, my alarm plays on my phone and a message pops up to say, celebrate the day and stop working. Now, if you didn't know this is a kind of side tech tip. If you didn't know it, you can actually edit the words of your alarm on an iPhone. Now, it's a recent discovery from me. I need the alarm for two reasons. First, just to stop working. I work from a home office and I just find it useful to have something that pulls me away from my inbox and all the rest. Now, I appreciate, of course, that many people have plenty of things to be pulling them away from their work, but this alarm for me is a reminder to help me hold my own boundaries. The second reason for the nudge is more important, to notice what happened during the day. Now, I am very oriented to being future-focused, which means I'm not always great at being in the moment and stopping to notice progress and milestones and achievements and life. So when the alarm goes, I make note of one thing at least I'm celebrating from the day. If I'm by my journal, I write it in there. But if I'm not, because sometimes I'm out, I stop and I give myself 30 seconds just to think about it, to recognize it, to name it, to see it, to claim it. And you can probably see how this syncs up nicely with the one thing question from before. If you ever got to the end of a week and thought, what exactly have I been doing all week? Well, this practice, this one question can help. What's my fifth question? Well, it's a type of inquiry rather than one specific question. But before I go there, let me set the scene for you. About 20 to 30 times a year, I host a dinner with two other people, typically people I know a little bit, but not particularly well. I've now been around long enough that there are hundreds of people I kind of have a sense of, maybe want to know a bit better, but have no real opportunity to test the waters. I've met them once or twice and there's nothing pulling us back together. So the dinner is me plus two others, somewhat randomly thrown together. I'm looking for serendipity here. To make sure it's not an evening of just small talk, there's a light structure to the evening. As Priya Parker says, or I'm paraphrasing her here, if you're going to host something, host it. So first we introduce ourselves, and I ask people to share two essential things about who they are. That always makes people think, what's essential? Now, that's not the fifth question, although you're welcome to use that if you're ever in the need to kind of prompt some deeper reflection. After that introduction, what happens then is I present a short list of big questions. The first guest picks one of them, and all three of us answer that question. Then the second guest picks one of the remaining questions, and again, the three of us all answer that one question. And honestly, that's all we need to fill a really enjoyable, insightful, and often unexpected evening. These big questions are quintessential, and I'm lumping them all together here as the promised fifth question. They're existential questions that help shake up who you are and what you're doing. Now, it's possibly a bit much to ask and answer one every day, but having a regular practice that shines some light into the darker corners of how you show up in the world can be very powerful indeed. So let me share three of my favorites with you. First, what's the crossroads you're at? What's the crossroads you're at? I love this because it helps you surface and own a choice that needs to be made, and a choice where you might be stuck, where you might be hesitating a little. What's the crossroads you're at has you name the dilemma. And once you name it, that choice becomes a little easier. Second, what old story is it time to change? What old story is it time to change? When I arrived in Toronto some 20 years ago, I signed up for a local soccer team. And when they asked me what position I played, I told them, I'm an attacker, I'm a forward. This was a lie. In fact, I'd spent 30 years only ever playing as a defender. But nobody knew my backstory, so I was free just to redefine myself. And it turns out that as a forward, I am excellent as a defender. I'm really not that good at scoring goals, but I loved reinventing myself. Now, you don't have to move countries to let go of old stories about who you are, about what's possible, about what's permitted, about what limits you. But you do first have to recognize the story you keep telling yourself so that you can ask yourself, is this a story that still serves me? Or is it time to let this old story go? Here's a third big question for you. What's the lesson you keep needing to learn? What's the lesson you keep needing to learn? Now, I'm a fast learner some of the time, but a really, really slow learner some other times, and maybe you are too. This question helps you recognize patterns you keep returning to that might not be serving you, the back and forth that you can get mired in. But it's not just about seeing the patterns. It's trying to accelerate the learning so that you actually do something in the next difficult situation. You do something differently in the next difficult situation. Once you see the lesson you're having to learn, you might just learn it. And once you learn it, there's a chance you might avoid or at least minimize the situation the next time it shows up. I started this conversation with you talking about trust. These five questions aren't for me just a cerebral exercise. They're a bridge to help me best engage in the life I hope to have for myself. They're questions that help me see how I am, to see what reality is around me, and to commit to the process of doing the best I can in the world. I hope you'll stay curious about who you are and the life you want to live. And I hope these questions will help. You're awesome, and you're doing great.